This episode is brought to you by the European Coworking Assembly. We are everything coworking Europe. If you head to the Coworking Assembly website, you can connect with our World Coworking, European Freelancers Week, Coworking Symposium, Coworking Library, and Coworking Tools. Hello, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coworking Values Podcast. We are going to do a little episode this week. I had a few things lined up, and just because of like getting COVID and being locked down and everything else that's going on, I can't get my guests in to publish an episode this week, but we can tell you about a few things coming up. And there's one thing I want to quickly get to that's really got my attention in an offline conversation with several people, and that is the biggest problem with co-working is nobody knows what co-working is. And I definitely contribute to this. So we are in this little bubble of co-working, of terminology. And the best story I have around is about 2018, 2019, when I first met Kofi from Urban MBA. As part of the London Co-working Assembly, we got together a group of people who ran co-working spaces and a group of people who were freelancers and micro businesses and startups who worked in co-working spaces. And then we got the young people on Kofi's Urban MBA course to come and meet people who ran co-working spaces and worked in co-working spaces. And the issue we were kind of tackling or bridging the gap was that in Hackney, which is an incredibly diverse area in London, there were lots of posh sort of pseudo workspaces for the community that rhyme with like bone and places like that. And our friend Isabel had researched all the co-working spaces and shared workspaces and whatever you want to call themselves in Hackney, and realized that the ethnic demographic of Hackney wasn't really represented in the workspaces. And it is, you know, we can call it lots of polite things, but it was, you know, sheer gentrification. And I actually had, you know, someone who ran a co-working space in Hackney said to me when we were talking about inclusion, diversity, accessibility and stuff like that, said, he said to me, I think all this inclusion stuff is a bit of a storm in a teacup. So if that's the type of person that is running a shared workspace in Hackney in 2020, they said that to me. And I'm not sure if that, you know, I'd love to name check it or date check it in the time before or after George Floyd's murder. But if they think that inclusion and diversity as they run a workspace in Hackney is a storm in a teacup, as you can tell, I'm speechless. So back to the event we were running. So we're sitting around in a circle and we're talking, everyone's sharing their experiences of how they work and what it is and what they want to do. And people are talking about creativity and video, and maybe there's like 30, 40 people there. And I'm sort of hosting the thing, so getting people up to talk on stage. And then I start talking about co-working, and I must have sounded so stupid and posh. I was like, yes, co-working is a transubstantiation of a pro-capitalist best practice, Zeitwein interface of collaboration, flexible, going on like that. And this young lad, white lad, says to me, "Oi, mate," he sort of like shouts at the back from me and at me, and he's like, "Oi, mate, you know, what's all that like co-working stuff?" And uses a few swear words, and you know, that's how I answered him, with like, "This is a intergalactic flexi workspace with and lots of eyes, you know, where we work eyes and collaboratize and, you know, phrases I want to punch my own self in the face for using." And he goes, "Why don't you just call it work then?" And as especially, I don't know why I'm like really looking for this on LinkedIn at the moment, but you know, there's all these terminologies we use. There's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, nice middle-class people on LinkedIn talking about reimagining work and using co-working hyphen and really getting into like reinventing work. And then there's conversations that have been going on, you know, well in from the last century about, you know, working in different spaces and sharing space and things like this. And, you know, one of the first co-working spaces in London was the Impact Hub in Islington in I'm going to say 2005, but I can't remember. And just getting groups of people to work together. And now we're the other part that I really noticed during lockdown was that there was for years, you know, I discovered, if you like, co-working in 2008 on Meetup when I was just, I joined Meetup when I was just looking around the platform nonstop. And that's where I found London Bloggers Meetup. And arguably that's where I discovered co-working. At the time I ran a networking group and we kept on sitting in the cafe. We were having our networking breakfast in afterwards with our laptops and working. So, you know, I'm not going to say I invented co-working in London, but we were doing something which only later did we realize was co-working. And we even had a conversation about there was a chartered surveyor in our group and said, well, you know, I could just rent you this space I have near King's Cross. It's a shit basement, but we could all sit around there and do our work together. And I didn't take it because I had no, you know, I can't even like organize my Google Workplace contract, let alone rent a building. But we then... You know, then on Meetup, I found Tony Bacigalupi and New Work Cities and was like, oh my goodness, that sounds great. And then a couple of years later, I started working in the Innovation Warehouse, which is, this would have been about 2010, helping them get people into the building. And that was the kind of co-working evolution. And for years, no one... you know, I'd say I do co-work and always had to explain it to people outside, you know, like basically anyone, all the people that don't know you're a freelancer, don't know what freelancing is, don't understand why you don't have a job and don't understand what co-working is, which is, you know, there's 68 million people in the UK and maybe like a million people understand a little bit of what those words mean. And then I noticed in 2020 and 2021, people started saying, oh, Bernie, you know, I've heard about this co-working thing. And it's because everyone had to go and work at home and then you had to find, they were forced to look for new ways to work. And that's not new ways as in I've just invented a new way to work, is in their world, they'd always commuted and whether they drove into town or got a train into town, and that was how they did their work. And now they'd been forced to find an alternative because the whole world had gone into lockdown. And that's why it is a new way of work to people. But there's people in the real estate industry and, you know, even our co-working industry running around like they've just invented a new way to work. So maybe, you know, I am a hardcore marketer and would, you know, love to spin anything. So maybe we just need to explain it as a new way to work, even though, you know, it's a very old thing. But as you can feel, it's coming through. There's people laying claim to have reimagined shared workspace in the last 18 months is a little bit, I wouldn't say that it's even annoying. It's not transparent. It's not honest. It's trying to spin something. It's like the people who in around 2008 were still selling networking group memberships to people, and they were selling them to people who hadn't yet discovered the internet. So you know, the reason to join a networking group was to meet other people and connect and grow your business. But you could do all that on LinkedIn. And it's almost like they didn't want you to find out about the internet because then you'd stop buying the membership to the networking group. But actually the people that really run good networking groups have this like, you know, amazing skill of curating and connecting people and hosting things. And, you know, that's where their skill is. Their skill is not just getting people in the room and having them swap business cards. So, you know, there's a very fine line there, but you can either put people together and make the magic happen or you can't. And there's plenty of networking groups, even these days, you know, in London, where the person who runs a networking group makes all their money just off getting people in a room and pretending that they couldn't have met online. So I hope that makes sense. So this kid says to me, why don't you just call it work? And that's kind of my main thing here, as well as, you know, the biggest problem with co-working is no one knows about co-working, is because, you know, when we kind of dress something up, we're taken away from the amazing opportunity for everybody. And that's why I'm a big fan of, I mean, this is not a sponsored post, but I'm a big fan of Gareth and Mandy and the folks at Town Square, is because they open a space, which they've been doing for years. They open a space in Bognor Regis, Wrexham, and, you know, not city centre things. They deliberately open a space in a smaller town, and they deliberately don't call it co-working because, as you would have heard me say on this podcast before, most people think that co-working is where people, young white men who hope to be the next Mark Zuckerberg, go to do their tech things. And actually, as a lot of you listening to this who run co-working spaces will know, you know, there's not that many, you know, jumped up startup people running around your co-working spaces. The average age of, you have to ask Carsten from DeskMag exactly what this is, but I've read enough research papers to know that the average age of a person starting a startup is around the 40, 45 year old age mark. And the average age of most co-working spaces I've been in, including the one I'm here now, is it's got to be the upper side of 35. So people deliberately don't go to co-working spaces because they don't want to be bumping into hyped up Instagrammers with their new flash new tech startup. They just want to go somewhere and have their work, get their work done. And that's why we need to work harder on educating people in our cities, in our countries, about how amazing having I'm going to call it a shared workspace just for the future of this podcast, how having a shared workspace in the way that Town Square do, and I'll put a link in the show notes to some of the podcasts we've done with the folks there, is you know, it replaces the role that places of worship in England, we all used to go to the pub, the cafes, until, you know, up until 2010, there were a lot of community centres in London. I was with Tom Kane, who's part of Community Co-working, and he was telling me that there was an organisation in the UK which still exists, and I can't remember the name of it, that in the 1930s basically made an open source blueprint for plans to build a village hall. So in the 1930s in the UK, there was this explosion of a big spread of village halls built in smaller towns and villages, but because this company made open source blueprints and said, this is how you get the funding, this is how you raise the money, this is how you can get people to help build it, this is the order you should build it in, these are the best places to get the materials, this is the type of wood. So all those little community halls open across the UK in the gap between the First and Second World War. And that was a huge part of the community. And I mean, where I live in the east or outer east side of London, you can still see those buildings, but they're not community places anymore. The places for local people to gather has completely changed. So there is this, and I know, you know, a lot of these sort of side conversations have happened at conferences we've met at over the years, is reinstalling this sense of community and making a place where people can gather is really important. So that, you know, I'm sensitive of pasting this vision too much because I, you know, as I'm speaking, I can picture different cities and different villages and different circumstances from those of you that I know across Europe. But, you know, workspace can be somewhere where people come and do their work in the daytime. It could be a nursery there. If I ask Shazia Mustafa, who's based in the UK, was one of the first people, I'm going to say one of the first people on the planet to successfully open a co-working space with a fully legally qualified, certified nursery. Not just a room where you hang with the children while you do your work, but like there's a co-working and a nursery next door to each other. And you can go and do your work. There's childcare there. People can come and run, you know, youth groups, run hobby clubs, meet there for local political meetings, anything that gets people together. I can't remember what it's called in France, but there's the sort of sharing economy company called the Food Assembly, which brings farmers markets. Farmers bring their food into deliver food into a base, which is, you know, co-working space is great for that. So people order exactly what they want online and the farmers bring it in to town. So they make one trip and meet their customers rather than standing in a market all day hoping someone will buy something. So there's all these different things we can do. So the idea of having a co-working space or a shared workspace in your local area, and that people are allowed to go to it, they don't have to be super duper Dragon's Den business people. And as I actively seek out these conversations, I have friends that work for banks and insurance companies and car leasing companies, and they're now allowed not to go into the office every day, and they don't want to sit at home because their mental health is going downhill, and they can do work at home, but they'd like to find somewhere, you know, not every day of the week, but like every now and then to go out and work. They can't work in a cafe because, you know, they have sensitive legal personal data on their computer, so they can't risk someone seeing a screen or that the Wi-Fi being hacked. So that, you know, it's there, and we need to educate these people, not with free beer and indoor slides and, you know, triffid like plants and stuff like that. We need to start conversations around not new imagining ways of work and all this flashy manipulative language that people use. It's just like, you know, why don't you come here? Why don't you sit down here, have a chat with people in your local area? Something that's definitely happened to me in the last 2 years is I spent so much time in my local area. I definitely see smile at more people on the bus, smile at more people going through the park I walk through on the way to work, and I'm more connected with the local restaurants. If you see me on Instagram, I'm just, me and my son are always in this cafe having amazing coffee and doing our homework and finishing off newsletters after school there. And it's this, you know, we live in London, and it's this cute little existence I just didn't think was available, because I used to rush into town and then watch the clock and then rush back out, and everything was rushing. And now we're more connected to our local community, and we save a ton of money because we're not getting on the train every day. But that's my little rant for today, ladies and gentlemen. I would also like to massively bring to your attention the, I think by the time you're listening to this, it might have happened, but also go look up the Co-working Alliance Summit that's run by my good friends Ashley Proctor and Hector Galanis. This is the second year they've done this, and this is, if you're thinking of, which I really hope you are, if you live in a city and you're looking for a way to get people together, there's a group of people that have already been doing it for years and years and years. A lot of the people that come to this summit, I have just learned so much off from the last 10 years. And they've now, you know, despite what I just said, you know, kind of people have an idea of what shared workspace and co-working is and what it can do. And, you know, I've been following a lot of these people since, you know, 2010, when I was trying to work out how to do it. And there's a lot of conversations that have been happening at things like Co-working Europe and Co-working Spain and the German Co-working Federation, and things we've done in London over the years. But to get all these people in one room, and it's not a hoo-hoo, wow-wow, want to take your signature. It's a group of very down-to-earth people with a very diverse range of experiences, and they've seen the evolution of what's happened. So if you're I think one of the best things we can do in our cities is get people who run shared workspaces together from, you know, every economic level, you know, big shiny spaces and small little owner managed spaces, to have a conversation about what works and what doesn't work. Because, you know, people will outgrow the smaller space and want to move to the bigger space. And instead of trying to be in competition with each other, is actually work out how together you can grow the local community, grow the local economic development of the place, how to approach your local authority. It's taken 5 years, but we've done all this kind of stuff in London by just making connections and starting conversations with people. And it's just, you know, there's still loads to do, but it's such a rewarding atmosphere. You know, like the last co-working assembly breakfast I couldn't go to here in London, is, you know, there's something like 30 or 40 people showed up, and there were loads of people from the local authority. There's loads of people who, you know, from our friends who run software companies in London, who all, you know, they sell software, but they're also interested in how to develop relationships within the local community. And some of those people are they constantly support what's going on in our work in the co-working assembly and the co-working idea project, and they're coming to the co-working alliance summit. So that's it. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Please rush over to the, or jog over, don't rush, jog over to the coworkingassembly.eu, sign up for our email that comes out every week, and it's about stories of people like you who are building co-working spaces, building projects around co-working. Coming up with you, I have my friend Sonia Thompson, who is running the February co-working idea project. I've learned so much off of this lady over the years, and her main project is inclusive marketing. That's on the co-working idea project at the moment, or if you go to soniathompson.com, everything she does is there. Also, Jose Morales, who is running the ever-growing, basically Jose stepped up and is really, really interested in the possibilities around rural co-working, and he's on this mission and has an ever-growing team of connecting all the rural co-working conversations that are happening in Europe. And that's academic people, local authorities, people starting their own spaces. So I urge you to go and join into that. And then at some point, I'm going to try and get Jo from the co-working library to come and join me, because she's incredibly busy at the moment, single-handedly changing the economy of Germany with all her work. And then we're always looking for interesting stories. This is a very English-speaking podcast, but one of our ambitions is to start it in Spanish in the run-up to Co-working Spain in April. So always get in touch if you have an idea for a story. And I'm going to knock it on the head there and go home and eat my homemade curry, Pete's lamb curry. And thank you very much for listening. There's been a load of support from you folks, particularly in 2020. I think everyone's got the energy back in 2020. So thanks for paying attention. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.